This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is On the Media. I'm Bob Garfield. For you and me, Australia is a Commonwealth democracy on the other side of the world, where winter is summer, kangaroos hop around, and English is spoken with only two or three vowel sounds. Nice opera house, sharks in, like, the drinking water. But to the National Rifle Association, Australia is a nightmare. That's because of its gun laws. In 1996, a man armed with an AR-15 assault rifle murdered 35 people in Port Arthur, Tasmania, which led to dramatic restrictions on private ownership of semi-automatic weapons and the $300 million buyback of more than 500,000 firearms. And this has contributed to a nearly 60% drop in firearm suicides and more than a 40% drop in the firearm murder rate, which is why the country is the NRA's bête noire. It's a laboratory, population 25 million, that disproves the gun lobby's biggest of big lies.
The only thing.
The only way.
The best way.
The surest way.
To stop a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun.
And so when a far-right Australian political party sent emissaries to the NRA in the company of a native Aussie gun rights group, each saw an opportunity in the other. What neither the NRA nor the politicians from the One Nation Party knew was that the meetup was orchestrated by investigative journalists from Al Jazeera and surreptitiously filmed by a man who had operated under deep cover for 3 years to penetrate the gun lobby. Peter Charley is executive producer of Al Jazeera's North American Investigative Unit based in Washington, D.C. He's the mastermind of the sting and was behind the two-part documentary How to Sell a Massacre. Peter, welcome to OTM.
Thank you very much.
Let's start with the players. What is the One Nation Party, and what was their interest in the NRA?
The One Nation Party is a right-wing anti-immigration party that's been gaining traction in Australia for probably about 20 years. It's embraced by the country folk of Australia and reviled by the people in the cities. It's caused a great division within Australia. Its interest in the NRA was an interest in forming bonds with powerful and wealthy gun proponents in the United States.
Then there was their partners in this expedition for money and collaboration. The organization Gun Rights Australia, in the person of a kind of nondescript fellow named Roger Muller.
From Australia to the land of the free, Roger Muller traveled to the NRA convention in Louisville from down under.
We're here at the NRA conference to learn more about what the NRA has done. We've had some great conversations.
He purported to want eventual repeal of the country's gun restrictions, but
he is a man I hired to infiltrate the NRA. When I formed Gun Rights Australia, I started looking all around Australia for an appropriate person to pose as the leader of that group. And then I thought of Roger. He's someone I've known for about 20 years, an acquaintance of mine from the days when I lived in Sydney, Australia. You know, he's an affable kind of guy who could walk into a room and put everyone at ease. And he also had time on his hands, so I was able to pluck him out of Australia and send him over to the United States and guide him very carefully through a series of meetings with the NRA and various other gun lobby groups.
Now, when I say deep cover, I mean deep. Roger was freaking Serpico. Who knew about this double life?
Roger and I knew about it, and my bosses. Roger kept it from his family and his friends and the community he lived in, and that caused him some difficulty, of course, with people seeing someone who is a jovial, beer-drinking kind of Aussie mate suddenly talking about the need for more guns in Australia and talking about his friends who was developing at the NRA. And at one point on Christmas Day, a stranger came up to him and punched him in the face and said, "You do not ever change Australia's gun laws."
You recruited him to pose as a true believer, to con the NRA and One Nation simultaneously. What were you hoping to snare these people in?
I happened to be driving past the NRA headquarters when, on my car radio, I heard a report of another mass shooting. And I looked at the building as I was driving past and thought, what on earth are they saying in there about what I'm hearing out here? And I thought, well, there's only one way to find out what their true unguarded comments are, and that is to infiltrate that organization.
You very quickly did find out what they say in the wake of tragedies. It's always been plain to see, but here we got to see it articulated in private. It was unsurprising, but nonetheless sickening.
If your policy isn't good enough to stand on its own, how dare you use their deaths to push that forward?
Mm. Mm. That's really good.
That's a great one.
Strong.
Apart from the rhetoric you heard in these conversations, you also hear the NRA advising their Australian counterparts how to ghostwrite op-eds for politicians.
We'll pitch guest columns in the local papers. A lot of times we'll write them for like a local sheriff in Wisconsin or whatever. We'll help them and then they'll submit it with their name on it so that it looks organic.
How to cultivate friendly reporters to give big play to stories when guns are successfully used in self-defense.
You have somebody who maybe worked at a newspaper, maybe was covering City Hall or a crime reporter, who were robbed, had their homes invasion, beaten, whatever it might be, that could have been helped had they had a gun. And that's going to be the angle on this.
And over and over, we hear them reminding the Aussies to pander to women's sense of vulnerability.
If the mom is against you, dad's just not going to fight that fight, right? And the kids aren't going to be allowed to, you know, you've got to get...
And the other thing we heard is that clearly the NRA is itself very eager to take the Australia example out of the gun control conversation.
In the United States, a lot of times they go, well, look at Australia. Look at Australia.
There's the problem.
And we have to fight that argument continually.
The NRA have made no secret of the fact that they are very unhappy with Australia's gun control laws. And when One Nation came to them with the suggestion that they didn't like Australia's gun control laws either, it was music to NRA's ears.
The inner workings and the PR techniques of the NRA are infuriating to witness, especially in the wake of these bloodbaths. But I'm not sure that How to Sell a Massacre actually located, excuse the expression, a smoking gun. Is there something that has the potential to sway public opinion?
In some areas, I think the answer to that is yes, specifically the political arena of Australia, where shockwaves are still reverberating after these disclosures that a political party travelled to a foreign country to seek advice and funding from a powerful gun lobby group while offering to water down Australia's cherished gun laws in the process. That is, to use your term, a smoking gun of sorts. As far as the NRA side of the story goes, I don't think there's anything in the revelations that would necessarily shock people, although they may be appalled at the attitude being displayed by NRA officials in guiding people through the steps required to hose down public anger and outrage after
the
another
abject
masculine
cynicism.
Yes, that's right.
About sting operations, in general, they are deemed journalistically unethical. They're founded, after all, on a lie. First of all, were any laws broken, U.S. or Australian?
Laws were not broken. Yes, there was subterfuge involved. We created a fake gun rights organization. Roger Muller, even though that's his real name, was adopting a fake persona in order to persuade people to allow him into their world. My view on this is the nature of the material we gathered is of such enormous public interest that I believe it relieves us of the constraints that would otherwise be imposed on us, at least according to the Australian Journalist Code of Ethics, the MEAA, the Media, Entertainment and Arts Alliance. There is a provision there for the ethical constraints that would normally apply to be overridden if the public interest is sufficiently grave, which I'm convinced it was here. It is something that shouldn't be undertaken lightly. We were treading very carefully into this area. We sought extensive legal advice and had to clear a series of hurdles in the editorial world of Al Jazeera in order for us to receive permission to start moving forward with the use of concealed cameras.
Maybe especially in this day and age when the press is just so widely and increasingly distrusted, it seems to fulfill the worst suspicions about our trustworthiness. Your timing possibly could not have been worse.
I take your point, but I don't know how timing could have ever been better either, because the number of mass killings that are taking place in the United States is staggering. The response of the NRA, as we now know for certain, because they disclosed their playbook to One Nation, is to stay silent. So I think if we were ever going to step into this contentious world of infiltration and the use of concealed cameras, I think now is the time to do it. Accusations of fake news or fake reporting, well, they're bound to occur anyway, and I'm prepared to take that on the chin.
Peter, thank you very much.
Thank you, Bob.
Peter Charlie is executive producer of Al Jazeera's North American Investigative Unit and mastermind of the sting that resulted in the two-part documentary, How to Sell a Massacre. This is NRA country. We love the stars and stars. That's it for this week's show. On the Media is produced by Alana Casanova-Burgess, Mike Lowinger, Leia Fetter, John Hanrahan, and Asta Chaturvedi. We had more help from Zandra Ellen and Sharina Ang. Our technical director is Jennifer Munson. Our engineers this week were Sam Baer and Josh Hahn. Brooke is out working on a phenomenal special series, and they swear to me, she'll be back one of these days. I'm Bob Garfield.
On the Media is supported by the Ford Foundation, the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, and the listeners of WNYC Radio.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.